to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's afternoon satsang, offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me, as always, is Arvind. Last week, we completed our Ramayana fortnight, so this week, we are going back to something that we started before we embarked into our Ramayana story. That is the Navaveda Bhakti. The first episode we had a short introduction about the entire concept of the Navaveda Bhakti. We followed it with the first path or Shravanam. It is time now to move to the second lap or the second type of devotion. As we discussed, it can be spoken of as both. We are talking about the second part, and this is actually very important. I think as we go through this, we will know that the movement that Swami has started, Swami's message is very much conveyed and emphasized by the second path of the Navaveda Bhakti. Before we embark into that and talk more about it, I invite Arvind to join me. Sai Ram, Arvind.
Sai Ram, Prem. And this is so beautiful that today we are discussing Kirtanam, which comes second in the Navaveda Bhakti Marga. And as you rightly said, when we say Navaveda Bhakti Marga, it can be nine types of devotion, or it can be the ninefold path of devotion. So therefore, it can be considered as a hierarchy, or it can also be considered as a classification. So I think today, as we go through this, we will see that in his discourses, Bhagwan has made ample references to Kirtanam, to this Navaveda Bhakti Marga, as a hierarchy, as well as different types. So it is natural that in our discussion too, both these will get mixed with each other. And that is the request to our listeners, that as we discuss, Kirtanam may appear as the second step in the nine steps towards reaching the ultimate. At the same time, it can also appear as a second type among the nine types available. So we will be shifting interchangeably between these two. So today we begin with Kirtanam, and as I say, it is special because Kirtanam is something on which Bhagwan has elaborated in great detail.
Right. In fact, the thing goes back to even Swami's childhood, isn't it? Now, going probably the definition first, what we understand is Kirtanam. The most basic definition, Kirtanam is singing the glory of the Lord, be it bhajans, be it devotional music, be it any kind of music, but singing. Kirtanam is the act of singing the name or the glory of the Lord. Even when you learn music, when you learn Carnatic music, you always have those Kirtanams, which you call the Pancharatna Kritis of Tyagaraja, are supposed to be Kirtanams. The Kirtans which are sung in the Gurudwaras, the Sikhism, those are Kirtanam. The hymns, you know, what you call in the Western culture, in the churches you have hymns which are sung, or for that matter you have Kavalis which are sung in praise of Allah in mosques and dargahs. Those also come under Kirtanams. So any form of singing in praise of the Lord, in praise of the Lord's name, can be considered as singing. And that precisely gives us the understanding why it is so important and central to Swami's message and Swami's mission that in a sense he started. Because even in his childhood, one of the first things that Swami started was the Pandari Bhajan group, right? Which essentially capitalized on the importance of this path.
Absolutely. When we are defining Kirtanam as singing out God's glory, if we look at the root word from which Kirtanam has been derived, not the root word, the basis word on which it has been derived from Kirti, which means fame. Fame or glory, not in the ephemeral sense, but in an everlasting permanent sense. This is very interesting because, you know, Bhagwan in a shloka, let me remember it. It goes as Astiram Jivanam Loke, Astiram Yauvanam Dhanam, Astiram Dhara Putradi, Satyam Kirti Dvayam Stiram. Says that in this world life is temporary, youth is temporary, you know, your wife, children, everything is temporary. If at all there is anything permanent, it is truth, satyam and kirti, which is fame. Why I thought this was interesting is because, you know, if when we look at our life's objective as to attain happiness, and not ordinary happiness, permanent happiness. In order to attain permanent happiness, we have to look for it in something that is permanent. And Bhagwan very clearly says that only two things that are permanent are satyam and kirti. So, kirtanam has its origin in this word kirti, which is supposed to be permanent. And that is why, you know, it becomes like a mathematical deduction. It becomes logical as to how kirtanam is the way to something that is permanent. Because kirtanam is based on kirti, which is one among the two things that is permanent in this universe. And therefore, kirtanam becomes a very, very important path. In fact, in several discourses, Bhagwan has mentioned that kirtanam is the most important path.
Right. And going back to this idea of fame being important, you know, when we were discussing in some other context when this came up, it's really confusing when Swami says, on one hand, Swami would say, don't do anything for popularity or fame or name. But here Swami is saying that kirti is most important. In fact, it outlives so many other aspects of life, even the wealth that you earn, even the, you know, the power, the influence.
And
everything else, the influence you earn. So, I mean, there seems to be a contradiction in this, but I think what Swami is hinting at probably is, you know, there is some kind of fame or there's some kind of kirti which you can earn, which is beyond this understanding of our concept of world and our concept of society. Because I think in Premavaini once when we were working for another project, in that Swami speaks of that, you know, you might, when Swami says that only those of good character earn fame, you might wonder, what about all those politicians and other people who might not be, you know, walking the right path but still earning the fame?
Yeah, this is, I think, chapter 1 of Premavaini.
Right. In that, Swami goes on to explain, but I am not talking about the society that you are thinking of. I am not talking of the fame that you are thinking it is. This is something which is ethereal, and probably, you know, the record of that kirti happens in some other plane. It's not necessarily in the society as in the newspapers and in social media as we understand. And that comes out of genuine character, which Swami says. And when we speak about kirtanam, Swami is talking about that kirti which is eternal, not necessarily the glory as we understand it.
And not necessarily, as you rightly said, something that gets you newsworthiness or makes you popular. It is something much, much deep. But still, Prem, you know, for a few days, actually, I have been thinking of this shloka. That's why I think it came out in this context.
Okay.
Possibly, if we were having a satsang on Padasevanam also, it would have come out, I think. Because I've been mulling over this. I felt that, of course, the absolute, at a fundamental level, what Swami has written in the Premavahini, what you quoted just now, yes, that is the kirti that we have to look for. But even in a worldly sense, I was thinking as, in a worldly sense, meaning in the dual world when we are seeing it, it holds relevance because I feel satyam is what we are.
Okay.
Okay, what we are. That, and kirti is how, what people perceive what we are. So, I feel when Swami says satyam and kirti are permanent, these are the two important, I feel Swami is telling us that it is important who we are, that is, we should be good. It is also important what others think we are. That also should be good. It is no use only being good, but not appearing good. I feel if we look at the Ramayana, you know, when Rama sent Sita away because of what one washerma person said or a dhobi said about that. The whole world knows Sita is good. I mean, the whole world today. And I'm sure Rama also knew that Sita is good. But possibly, I'm just looking at it, forgetting all the other divine aspects, just purely from a societal and, you know, social point of view. Possibly Sita didn't appear good, that's all. So Sita is good, but didn't appear good. So, and therefore, that exile into the forest came. If we look at it, if we look at this concept of being good and appearing good, appearing good when you're not good. That is having kirti without satyam. That is absolute hypocrisy. That is, you know, that is villainy almost. It's a sin. You're not good, but you know how to appear good in the eyes of the world. You can't cheat anyone because God knows. God knows ultimately. So that is something that we should, that is abhor. We can abhor it. Appearing good, but not being good. The other thing is being good, but not appearing good. Like, I am good and I know that Swami knows that I am good. But haven't we seen so many times in our lives, Prem, where Swami insists on we not only appearing good, also being good. I remember a personal episode where, you know, in some circumstance where Swami called and told me, who is that you were walking out with? I said, Swami, you know, this was a person whom I considered as a Sai sister who was almost 10 to 12 years younger than me. So I just said, sister. Swami said, not actual sister. I said, Swami, but she's sister. Swami said, that you know that I know. Nobody else knows. You know, Swami said that. So I was thinking, if Swami is highlighting this, it means it's not enough that what I consider and whatever I consider, Swami knows that. But it's important, Swami gives importance to how the world perceives also. So therefore, appearing good when you're not actually good is hypocrisy. Being good but not appearing good is foolishness. It is not. We need to be good as well as appear good. And this is what I felt at a practical level. In a worldly sense, is the meaning of Satyam and Kirti are sthiram. These are permanent. Satyam is what you are. Kirti is what you appear to be. That is why, you know, Swami would tell in his discourse also, I know that my students are Bangaram. They are gold. But go out and earn a good name. It's not enough if you're gold, if you're good. You also have to earn a good name. Because Satyam is you are good. Kirti is you earn a good name. So I just felt that this is a practical and worldly interpretation of Kirti and Satyam.
Absolutely. I think it's very beautifully put. In fact, if that was not the case, Swami would not have emphasized that particular message of his where he said, you know, Deva Preeti, Papa Bhiti and Sangha Neeti. Because the society has a way of regulating yourself, regulating you and keeping you on the path. And that is why, you know, whichever society you are in, Swami would say that whichever country you are in, to live within the legal system of that country, to live within the moral codes of that society is also very important. You know, it might be different in different times. In fact, Swami would say that in different times in the same country, it is different. You know, in the different yugas, it is different. But to fit into that is also important. It's not completely, it is not the completeness, but at the same time, it is important. But Swami would say that don't stop with being good only for the sake of others. And that's why Papa Bhiti comes. You know, when that fear comes that even if I do a good when nobody is watching, it's going to get me into trouble. That's where Papa Bhiti comes. But Swami says even that is not the ultimate. It should come out of Deva Bhiti, your love for God. And I think these three can in fact define what we're going to talk about Kirtanam 2. Where Swami would sometimes say, you know, Bhava Raga Tala. God sees only Bhava, but Raga and Tala also has to be good for right. the world's sake because people are listening to you and they should not run away when you sing, especially when Swami speaks to our bhajan students, you know, bhajan singers amongst the students. Swami would say this.
Absolutely. So we will be going into that, and dear listeners, it will happen that when we speak of Kirtanam, a lot of singing will come into it because that is the direct and standard meaning of Kirtanam, but we will also delve a little further into it because does this mean that Kirtanam is restricted only to those who can sing? Because this is a question that we asked even with Shravanam, you know. What about people who are deaf? Can't they do Shravanam? And I'm really thrilled that by Bhagwan's grace we arrived at a beautiful conclusion that Shravanam is all about vibes and vibrations. It's not about just what we hear, but also what we see, what we smell, whatever input we take through all our senses. So in the same manner, we pray for inspiration from Bhagwan as always, and we know that he never lets us down. With that prayer, we proceed. And to make starting remarks, Prem, I just feel, you know, Kirtanam is special as a higher form than Shravanam because in Kirtanam, in normal cases, there is Shravanam that is automatically happening. You can't have singing the glory of the Lord without you yourself hearing. And if you remember in Shravanam, we had classified it as three types. One is passive listening, one is active listening, and one was focused listening. So, in Kirtanam, I think you can't have Kirtanam with passive listening, because when you are singing, you are either listening actively or you are listening focused. When you're listening actively, it might possibly be to ensure that you're in tune, you're in beat, your raga and tala is fine. And when it's focused listening, that is when you have raga, tala and bhava in sync, all three in fine sync. So a minimum that is expected in a kirtankar or a person who does kirtan is to have raga and tala in sync. So whenever kirtan is, the action of kirtan is performed, there is definitely either active listening or focused listening. So by default itself, it looks as if that it puts you at a higher level of Shravanam by including Shravanam in itself. And no wonder that on the 26th of January, the Republic Day in India, 1982, when Bhagwan gave his discourse, in that he mentioned that Shravanam and Kirtanam are the best forms of worship in this Yuga. That is what he had said. So I feel in among Shravanam and Kirtanam, Kirtanam becomes higher because by default it has Shravanam inbuilt in it.
And even looking at it from this point of view, as you said, Shravanam is not just confined to the hearing faculty. If you look at it that way, Shravanam has all got to do with what we refer to as the Jnanendriyas, or the senses which allow you to absorb material from outside. But when you talk about Kirtanam, when you talk about singing, when you talk about speaking, or you talk about writing, whatever it is, you're talking about using your Karmendriyas, or your, you know, faculties of action. And whenever you have to use the faculties of your action, you need a little bit more involvement. You know, for instance, while listening, as we said, three levels of listening, even for the most highest level, you're still only listening, but to act on it, to get up and, you know, to put it in expression, I think it's a level higher, where you not only listen, you not only enjoy listening, but you're so thrilled that you want to share. When that moment of sharing comes, I think it becomes Kirtanam.
And, you know, because it involves Karmendriyas and not Jnanendriyas, I just feel there's one more advantage that comes in. I remember you saying the other day that we are ready to do anything for Swami. If Swami tells, move this chair that side, even if it's 20 kilos, we lift and move. But if Swami says, sit here and control your mind, I may not be able to do it. Though I want to obey Swami, I may not be able to do it because I don't have control over my mind. In the same manner, I feel that having control over the Karmendriyas is a little more easier compared to having control over the Jnanendriyas. So while I can't assure my Lord that I can do Shravanam, I can definitely assure my Lord that I'll do Kirtanam, because after all, singing, we all do it. And isn't that one of the ways in which all of us, whether we are students or devotees, we get into this devotion, mode of devotion? Usually it is through bhajans. And it doesn't mean that we have to be good singers or have any music sense, nothing. We are able to clap, we are able to sing anything, and we get in, and slowly we develop the skill and ability also along the way. But that is more or less the way we get introduced into this. And I feel that is the reason why it has become a movement also. Even if we look at all the other movements, like Guru Nanak, Swami says in his discourse clearly that Guru Nanak was one of the first to start this. Not only Kirtan, but Sankirtan, with group singing, public singing. And if we look at it, all this, whether Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, anywhere where we see this, even Bhagwan's Pandari Bhajan group, these become a movement. At the same time, you take up somebody who starts possibly a route of meditation like revered Ramana Maharshi. Definitely it becomes popular and intense, but it's not something that the crowds and masses get into. Because those levels, I feel, involve, as you said, some kind of control over the Jnanendriyas. But since here it's Karmendriya, which is easy to control, easy to use, even a farmer, anybody can get in without much of, you know, sophistication or intellectual ability. So, therefore, this Kirtanam becomes a kind of a public transport system where everybody can get in by paying a very low ticket price and yet reach the destination.
Right. And in fact, now if you look at it, a number of youth from around the world are actually drawn to Swami purely based on this, you know, the bhajans culture and this Kirtanam. Because I think music is universally liked, you know, whether I am able to sing or not able to sing, whether I am adept at it or not. I think music draws everybody. There's of course a small percentage of people who say that I don't like music, I mean, I've come across people like that, but that's a very, very small number of people. Invariably, most of us get drawn to music. In fact, a lot of devotees say that they would have heard bhajans, you know, coming out of some house, and that was the first shravanam happens. But eventually they also want to participate. You know, that is where it goes to the next step, where you say, I want to participate, I want to be there. And what Swami has created, in fact, as Swami said, you were saying that Guru Nanak was the one who pioneered it in the form of Sankirtan. Then of course Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was one more person who was very, very instrumental in making it a movement where it has traveled to the West even now, you know, in the name of the Hare Krishna movement. What happens is, you know, even when you have an inhibition to probably sing out aloud, in a group you get drawn to it, and it's easier to participate. You know, all of us have the desire to participate, but we all have our own levels of inhibitions and shyness. Mm-hmm. But in a group it just goes off. You know, how many times we've sat in bhajans in the mandir, and when Swami is singing so loudly, when Swami is standing there at the table and Swami is clapping like that, you know, you just lose all your inhibition and you start clapping and singing. And we've seen elderly people do that. We've seen, you know, some people of eminence sitting there who probably would have been sitting very formally till then. But when that bhajan breaks out, I remember one of my seniors telling me that when the president or prime minister had come, you have these ADC standing behind them. You know, they stand like a statue. They can't, you know, show any reaction on their face. They can't move around.
In fact, they take pride in that ability of theirs.
Right. Even them, you know, even they could not hold themselves back when the bhajan start. You know, you can see that they're actually singing and probably giving a beat with their fingers.
I don't remember the exact date or place where this happened, but I have heard Bhagwan himself narrate in his discourse of how during one of his extensive tours of South India, he had gone to a place which was dominated by Shaivites, people who worship Lord Shiva.
It's in Karnataka, the Lingayat.
The Lingayat community. Right. So they are staunch worshippers of Shiva, and for those of our listeners who are unaware, there is this kind of a spiritual rivalry between the followers of Lord Shiva and the followers of Lord Vishnu, with each group claiming their Lord to be the supreme. They say Vishnu is supreme over Shiva, some say Shiva is supreme over Vishnu, and that's why, you know, there's that famous, in order to bridge this only, that famous quote where they say, Vishnusya Hridayam Shivaha, Shivasya Hridayam Vishnu. He says that in the heart of Vishnu, there is Shiva, and in the heart of Shiva, there is Vishnu, which tries to, you know, bridge this and say that it's after all the same power. But anyway, so this community, Lingayat community, they are staunch worshippers of the Linga Shiva, and Swami would narrate that they won't even hear the name of any form of Vishnu, not only Vishnu, any form of Vishnu. In fact, if they hear it, Swami would say that they close their ears and say, Shiva Shiva, Shiva Shiva. That's one way is saying that I'm shutting out my ears to listening to the other name.
The other and, is countering it.
and countering it with me saying Shiva Shiva. And Bhagwan said that when he completed the discourse, they were also enamored and lost in the sweetness and love that Swami was pouring. After that, he started singing Govinda Krishna Jai.
Right.
And everybody enthusiastically clapped and followed, losing all inhibitions. So when you say losing inhibitions, it's not only a kind of physical inhibitions or, you know, that feeling of getting embarrassed. Sometimes it happens in a bhajan when you're sitting and singing. So the line is a little long and you think that it has ended, and midway you start singing and suddenly you keep quiet, and for the next three lines you won't sing because you feel embarrassed. Though nobody around makes you conscious or anything, you just feel embarrassed that you started out of place. And so that is there, that physical embarrassment. But even these other kind of inhibition that are there, Kirtanam makes you break through that.
Absolutely. And probably before we go into the Kirtanam aspects of, this particular aspect of the Navavidha Bhakti, there is definitely something about singing, right? You know, though we say that Kirtanam or this path does not signify only the singing aspect of devotion, but there is indeed something special about singing. And that is why Swami gave so much importance to bhajans, and Swami made it a movement. Otherwise, it could have been a group reading or everybody sitting and, you know, everybody
doing a yagna.
Right. All could be just chanting Vedas. You know, why Swami gave so much of importance to bhajans? Of course, the idea that it is participatory and everybody can participate in it without having any level of talent. But this particular faculty, if you could say it, of singing is very special to human beings. You know, we say the singing of the koel, we say the singing of an animal or something, or a bird, but for them it is just their own voice.
Their own vocalization, right? Absolutely.
But I think as humans we have this ability to take the same words that we utter and put it in music, which is so dear to Swami. So probably that is what makes it so special. And instead of we going on speaking about it, probably we'll listen to a small clip where Swami says this, you know, how special music can make a prayer. And that is why Kirtanam is so special.
Singing the name with music becomes the heart and attracts the heart. అనేక మంది పండితులు శ్లోకరీతిగా చెప్తారు. ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ స్కాలర్స్ సింగ్ ఇన్ ది ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ శ్లోక. కానీ వారికి శ్లోక భావమే తెలుసును కానీ శ్లోకాన్ని నివారణ గావించలేదు. బట్ దే ఓన్లీ నో ది శ్లోక భావ, బట్ దే కెనాట్ రిమూవ్ ది సారో అండ్ సాడ్నెస్. మరికొంతమంది యాక్టర్స్ పదములను మాత్రమే చక్కగా గంభీరంగా ఉపయోగపెట్టారు. సమ్ ఆఫ్ ది యాక్టర్స్ కెన్ యూజ్ ద వర్డ్ ఇన్ ఎ వెరీ డిగ్నిఫైడ్ వే. అది కూడాను భావాన్ని ఆకర్షించలేదు. But they also will not be able to understand the kaani gaanam cheta hrudayanni kudanu teechi baaga chakkaga aa rasanni anubhavistundi. But through music it is possible to make the heart enjoy fully and completely.
Nastika yastika nastikalu kudanu ee oka gaanam lopala tamaku teliyakundane talanu oopukaru.
Believers, non-believers and any combination of these will also dance with joy when they hear this singing.
ఈ యొక్క పదముల చేత పద్యములు చెప్పవచ్చును. రామ నన్ను కాపాడు అని చెప్పవచ్చు.
దీస్ వర్డ్స్ మే బి యూజ్ యాజ్ ఎ పోయమ్ అండ్ సే రామ యూ ప్లీజ్ సేవ్ మీ.
బట్ ఇది ఎంత హృదయాన్ని చక్కగా హత్తుకున్నట్టుగా లేదు.
బట్ దిస్ విల్ నెవర్ అట్రాక్ట్ ది హార్ట్ అండ్ అపీల్ టు ది హార్ట్.
పదముల చేత ఓ రామ నన్ను కాపాడు అని అంటే ఇది కూడా అంత హృదయాన్ని హత్తుకోవటం లేదు.
ఇన్ ఎ ప్రొవోక్ వే వెన్ యూ సే ఓ రామ why don't you just save me, it will not be appealing to the heart.
Adhe gaanamato rama nannu kaapadu enta hrudayanni laagutundi, enta hrudayanni aakarshistundi. Ee gaanam cheta inta maadhuryam anetundi dendi untundi.
When the same words are sung in the form of a musical song, how appealing they are, how they can attract the heart and impress upon the heart.
Kanuka prati manavudu kudanu మీరు పాడకపోయినప్పటికీ పాడేటువంటి వారిని మీరు అనుసరిస్తూ మీరు కూడా పాడటం చాలా మంచిది.
యూ మే నాట్ బి ది లీడ్ సింగర్ బట్ వెన్ సమ్ లీడ్ సింగర్ సింగ్ ఆల్ ఆఫ్ యూ విల్ ఫాలో.
కానీ కొంతమంది నోరు ఏమాత్రము కదలదు.
బట్ సమ్ పీపుల్ డు నాట్ మూవ్ దర్ లిప్స్.
మేము లోపల పాడుకుంటున్నామంటారు.
దే సే వీ సింగ్ ఇన్ సైడ్.
అవును, సరైనటువంటి తృప్తి కాదు.
బట్ దట్ ఈస్ నాట్ ది కరెక్ట్ టైప్ ఆఫ్
సరే. వంట రూమ్ లో అన్ని వంటలు చేసి పెట్టావు. వంట రూమ్ లో వంటలు ఉన్నాయంటే నీ పొట్టలోకి వస్తున్నాయా?
డిఫరెంట్ టైప్స్ ఆఫ్ డెలీషియస్ ఐటమ్స్ ఆర్ కుక్డ్ ఇన్ ది కిచెన్.
భావం ఉన్నప్పుడు నీ లిప్స్ లో కూడా రావాలి, టంగులో కూడా చేరాలి.
ఇఫ్ యు ఆర్ ఫిల్డ్ విత్ ద ఫీలింగ్ యువర్ లిప్స్ మస్ట్ మూవ్.
అది సంకీర్తన సమ్యక్ కీర్తనం. ఇది సంకీర్తనం అనగా గొంతులు విప్పి తన యొక్క శబ్దం ఎంతవరకు పోతుందో అంతవరకు కూడా భగవత్ నామాన్ని ఉచ్చరించాలి.
సంకీర్తన రిప్రజెంట్ సింగింగ్ ఫుల్ థ్రోటెడ్ టు ది ఎక్స్టెంట్ దట్ యు ఆర్ కేపబుల్.
అప్పుడే భగవంతుని యొక్క హృదయాన్ని కరిగిస్తుంది.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ యూ కెన్ మెల్ట్ ది హార్ట్ ఆఫ్ గాడ్.
అప్పుడే తాను రక్షించగలడు.
దెన్ ఓన్లీ గాడ్ కెన్ సేవ్ యూ అండ్ ప్రొటెక్ట్.
బావిలో పడినటువంటి వాడు నేను బావిలో పడ్డా అంటే ఎవరూ వచ్చి రక్షించడు.
ఎ పర్సన్ హూ హస్ ఫాలన్ ఇన్ టు వెల్ simply whispers that I have fallen into
the well. Diga gontu vippi ayyo nenu baavilo paddan ani archinappude vachistadu.
When he calls out loudly, I have fallen into the well, save me, someone can come
anaga tani yokka kirtana anetundi samyak okka abhimanam kani mamakaram kaaku lekunda vikkali vidiga paadali.
Whenever you are singing in sankirtana, you will sing freely without any inhibitions whatsoever.
Endukosam
why have
మూతిని ఇచ్చేది ఎందుకు తెలుసా?
వై ఇస్ మౌత్ గివన్ డూ యూ నో దాట్?
ముద్దలు అనగా తిండి ముద్దలు మూతికి అందించుట.
ఇట్ ఇస్ నాట్ టు ఈట్ విత్ ది మార్ఫుల్స్ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్.
దట్స్ ది క్లిప్ అండ్ ఇట్స్ ఫ్రమ్ the Shivratri discourse of 1992, and even as we are approaching Shivratri, again it's another occasion where Swami uses to make us all sing together. And so many beautiful points in that short discourse, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, one thing that struck me just now was also an answer to what we had been discussing just before this. We were saying that, you know, sometimes we get embarrassed, sometimes we may have inhibitions. Swami gives the example that if you are a person fallen in the well, and if you just say, somebody help me, nobody is going to come to you. You have to raise your voice and shout out, hello, I'm down here, somebody help me. And then somebody comes and helps. I was thinking, you know, in that analogy, Swami has given such a powerful message. We will be able to give up all our inhibitions and sing out loud only when we are convinced that we are stuck in a well, actually, you know. Because let us face it, when we are in a situation of danger, when we know that nothing is going to help us, we don't bother about the language we use, we don't bother about how we are sounding, nothing. We just want help at any cost. So I feel if and only if we are convinced that we are stuck in this well called the world, and this world is never going to give us joy. There is no way for me to be happy. There is no way for me to be peaceful unless I get out of this. Unless I get out of the shackles that this well has put around me. That is my only hope for redemption. I think once that thing becomes clear in us, we will have no inhibitions about singing. And that's why we look at people like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They danced on the street. They lost. I mean, people would say that they're crazy, no body consciousness. You know, all that I think is not something. It's not that if I want to do kirtan, I have to start losing body. It's not that. It becomes natural the moment you are convinced that you are actually stuck in this world and you need help. You need help from someone who is out of the world. You know, literally, who is somebody who is out of the world to pull you out of this world. Manasa bhajare guru charanam dustara bhavasagara taranam. So somebody who needs to do that, only when you are convinced, I think then it becomes very easy to give up all inhibitions and sing out aloud. Because as Swami said, if you don't sing out aloud, how will anybody hear you and pull you out?
No, I'm reminded of a small story which our music teacher in school used to tell us. You know, how when you sing, you cannot stay still and sing. Because when he was trying to teach us to sing, he said you have to be expressive when you sing. So he used to tell this story. You know, there was this king who had his best musician in the court. And one day he kept a competition in the court. He said, my musician is going to sing, and I'm going to put a lemon on each one of your heads. Okay. And you say, when this person sings, if any of you shake your head and the lemon falls down, okay, you will be beheaded. Okay, so this lemon is kept on each one of the heads, and finally this person starts singing, and everybody is resisting that temptation to, you know, start swaying their head. Finally, one person sways his head and the lemon falls down. So he is in mortal fear. He's going to be, you know, beheaded. Then the king says, give him a bag of gold. I want to reward him. He says, he is the only person who is actually listening to the music. You know, even when there is a scare to your life, you actually can't resist yourself and you enjoy the music, then you're really enjoying the music. Now, when you look at it, when you speak about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dancing on the streets, I think Swami was very particular about the way you present yourself during bhajan session. You're not allowed to sway, you're not allowed to, to be too physically expressive.
Distract somebody who is by your side.
Absolutely. I think probably Swami was telling us that one day, however much, you know, inhibitions are there and however much
restrictions
are placed on you, one day you will burst out into a dance, not able to resist yourself. I think that is the moment when it is real. And many times when Swami would say on Padyam, that you call me once and I will come to you. And, you know, when I think of it, we sit for bhajans half an hour, 45 minutes, 12 hours, 24 hours. Swami, aren't we calling you? So I think it is... all this is preparation for that once when we will really call him.
Call him from the heart. And as you said, losing all inhibitions. Because Prem, without naming either the people or the place or anything, I had been to a Sai Samiti or a center, whatever you call it. And there the person in charge was very strict about following discipline. And, you know, there was a kind of seating arrangement for bhajan. So the first impression that you get is, wow, this is quite disciplined. So, you know, all were seated in straight rows. There is not even one person out of alignment. Okay. So I was also pretty impressed. I stuck with the discipline. I also went and sat. I got one row. So it's not as if, you know, we have seen these also happening in some samitis where you're an important singer because you sing well. So sometimes you turn up late, then you walk across the hall right to the front and sit because you're a singer. Why there? We have seen it happening sometimes in Bhagwan's presence also. You know, when Swami is possibly not, Bhagwan's presence, I mean, Swami is physically not there, but, you know, there will be a singer who will come and sit in front, and the others, possibly not so talented singers, or the others like us who are not at all singers, who are sitting for darshan, and we see this, we think, are they are taking it for granted. So in that light, this looked like an amazing thing. So it's first come, first serve, you go and sit. If you might be a singer, if you come late, you're back. So that is fine. That was fantastic. But then, you know, something happened. As the bhajan was going on, I began to clap. And somebody on the side said, no, you're not allowed to clap loudly. Because you have to clap softly because of this. So there were some reasons, and I was just thinking, that was just one among the several rules. So these multiple rules that had been put, I was just thinking that, oh my God, you know, if I have to keep in mind even these four rules when I'm doing bhajans, I don't think I'll be focusing on the bhajans. Because here is somebody who has kept a lemon on my head. So as you rightly said, so that day I balanced the lemon, you know. My lemon didn't drop. But as you said, that just shows that I was not so involved, lost in the bhajan. So it is possibly a test for the devotees there. But I feel, as you rightly said, when we are truly attuned to kirtana and sankirtana, nothing will stop us. Even our heads may get chopped off, as that person in the King's Court did. Won't be able to stop ourselves from swaying to the invisible rhythm and beauty of the kirtan.
Right. But the wisdom behind Swami's regulations, especially doing bhajans, is very clear. You know, Swami would often say that, you know, when you're doing sankirtan, it is not only important about your individually, you know, what is the connect you're having and what way you're relating to God. At the same time, your action should not become a distraction to those people around. And that is very important. In fact, one of the bhajan singers were telling, one Swami gave a huge discourse on how bhava is the most important aspect of bhajan singing. And Swami gave a discourse entirely that, you know, your raga can go, your tala can go, but bhava is what the God, what the Lord sees. The entire discourse is over, and after the discourse, Swami goes backstage, goes into the bhajan hall where the bhajan group was sitting, and categorically Swami said, whatever I said today was for them, not for you. Right? And Swami very beautifully, and, you know, in one sentence gave the reason for that. He said, when you stick to the discipline and when you sing with bhava and with raga and tala properly in line, they will feel the bhava. You know, that is one thing about sankirtana, because Swami says sankirtana is not only speaking, I mean, you're conversing with the Lord, your prayer, but it also brings that unity. That is what is an important thing. And the reason why somebody like Guru Nanak started this sankirtanam is because it brings about unity. It brings about that, you know, that feeling of transcending selflessness. Sorry, selfishness.
Selfishness, yeah. Right. You know, when you said about Swami being Bhavapriya, this question was asked, I don't remember where, in one of the talks, at the end of it, some people asked, see, when Swami is Bhavapriya, okay, let me put it this way. It's a double-edged sword, you know. Mm-hmm. Often these bhajan workshops are done. And when bhajan workshop is done, examples are given on how Swami was so keen and strict about the singer being perfect, the singer doing his or her sadhana, and also being a person who is constantly improving on his skill and talent. And when all this is given, at the end of it, you know, there were people coming and telling, sir, you know what, ever since your bhajan workshop, none of us ever get a chance to sing. There are only three people who are singing. We don't have enough singers, and nobody is given permission because such high quality standards. Oh, and that is the time when you remember, you know, examples where Bhagwan has heard even people who sing terrible, right? And he has encouraged them and he has fostered them. So that was when, you know, the bhajan workshops began to get oriented into how Swami gives importance to the effort and the bhava, and how we should encourage and hone. Of course, ultimate offering should be this, but we should hone the second string and the third string to come to second string, second string to come to the first string, and there should be a constant upgradation process. And now when this was done, that is where this problem came. The entire emphasis got shifted so much onto the bhava and effort that people said, then why not? Why can't everybody sing? You know, all of us have love for Swami. Why only the third string? Why only second string? Why not everyone, you know? So that was when this very nice answer was given, and I feel it's very apt. It was said that if you're convinced that Bhagwan listens to your bhava, then sing to him in your altar. Sing to him in your bedroom. Sing to him in your bathroom. Sing to him in your kitchen. Why do you want to come and sing for him in the mic in public? As long as you're singing for Swami, he can hear you even in your bathroom, even in your bedroom. Then sing for him there. But when it comes to mic where along with Swami there are 100 others listening, their raga and tala also becomes important. So whenever we speak about bhava, I make it a point to mention this. That if you're singing for Swami, yes, you need not do it in a mic in a public place. It often happens, you know, right next to my house in right next road to my house in Puttaparthi, there's one building where, you know, they put out speakers and on some occasions they sing bhajans. It's fine, it's a noble thing. They put it on loudspeakers, it's very loud, that is fine. But you know, the kind of singers who sing, really, even a novice like me can make out that they're going out of tune, they're going out of shruti, and it's a pain to the ear. Of course, they make you remember God, but not in that sense. I really say, oh God, oh Swami, when will they stop? Because it's such a pain to the ears, you feel your ears will bleed. So, you know, it might seem rude to tell them that you stop singing, and they'll say that, you know, the Lord sees my feeling and I have no doubts about the bhava they have. But that bhava need not express itself in a microphone. You can do it without the microphone.
Exactly. I think this, it has happened more than once in Kodaikanal when Swami would ask one of the students or lecturers to sing. Swami would do this, you know, there would be sessions where randomly Swami would pick up a devotee or elder and say, sing a bhajan. And when they sing, I think it happened to one of the teachers. He sang very, very, you know, heartfully on entire bhajan. And at the end of it, Swami said, Chala Bagundi, from tomorrow, sing only in your bathroom. But you know, the fun apart, but it was very serious, and many devotees have actually gone through this in a tough way. I remember speaking to, we spoke to one of the singers who were there in the 60s. In the mandir, you know, when they used to sing, they had the opportunity to sing every day, and some events happened by which they were asked to, you know, not sing anymore. So it was very painful, because for a long time, you know, because that bhajan session was something which was very special. There are many times, you know, you have problems at home, you come and you speak it out in the form of a bhajan. A lot of things happened in that session, so they felt really deprived of something which was so dear to them. But at one point, it suddenly struck her, you know, this auntie was telling us, that every time I sit there, I used to sing bhajans by saying, Swami, Man Mandir Mein Aao, you know, I'm singing from my heart, you come and install yourself in my heart. The real mandir is actually the heart. And I don't need a microphone and a speaker outside for me to converse with you, or I don't need it to really do that kirtanam. You know, wherever I sit, you know, somebody else might be singing, but I sitting there and following, how can it be any lesser than me sitting and, you know, speaking to you or singing as a lead singer? I think that is what bhajans have really done. And one thing which Swami has done over a period of time, even this morning we were talking, some of us were talking, that the way Swami has toned down bhajans so that it comes to a level where it is not very hi-fi, at the same time it's not very mundane, it's got a good quality. And it must have taken tremendous effort, because there were this huge number of very talented singers, each one wanting to compose very complicated bhajans, sing complicated alaps and third speed, fourth speed, fifth speed or whatever. But the way Swami marshalled all this and made it a very disciplined, path, this of bhajan singing, so that it's accessible to everybody. At the same time, it is not something which, you know, you take it very casually too.
As you said, we have seen this happening, you know, where Swami calls a boy and tells him that, no, what you're singing, it's so plain. Add some more swaras, add notes, do the alapana, you know, sing the alap in the beginning. On one hand, we see that. On the other hand, we have also seen Swami scolding somebody and saying, what is that stunt you're trying? Why are you trying extra curse? Do simple nama sankirtana, just sing the name of the Lord. And this is just one aspect. I'm sure, Prem, that we would have seen many times this kind of a, let me say, disconnect. So should I sing complicated bhajan or should I sing simple bhajan? if we go into the detail and get all the info, we realize that there is a reason for both. But in the absence of such detailed information and such deep introspection, it seems like a contradiction. Swami, you're saying this also, you're saying that also. I thought of bringing this up because, as I said in this discourse on the 26th January 1982, Swami mentions that Shravanam and Kirtanam are the ultimate forms, the best two forms. But I'm sure we will be able to produce discourses where Swami has said that Pada Sevanam is the best, where Sakhyam, friendship, is the best, where Atmanivedanam is the best. So Swami, which is the best? If all are the best, then why don't you state it like that all the times? If one of them is the best, then why don't you be consistent? Why do you keep changing? And this we see in other, I think we have brought up this point before, but maybe once again we clarify this point, because many times we see these contradictions. Swami says, you ask everything from God, God alone. God alone. In fact, in that discourse, I remember Swami came and said, will you go and tell your father, oh father, the one who works in a big bank, the one who wears a suit and boot, and you just say, father, I need this, give me. So he says, why do you praise and say, oh Karuna Sindho, Daya Sindho, Karuna Mai, and then say, oh, ask for your, just ask, it's your right. And that same Swami says, Adugakave O Manasa, O mind, don't ask. Because in your foolishness, you'll ask things that you don't need. God knows better than you. So now, should I ask or should I not ask? This was resolved, you know, with a very beautiful analogy. Imagine a teacher teaching students in a class. And imagine that students are there who belong to the first standard. And there are students who belong to the 12th standard, and there are students who belong to the university. If the teacher has to take a class, imagine how his or her lecture must be. It must be so varied. It must be a challenge to teach classes. Even it's tough. It is so tough to teach even two classes, like third grade and fourth grade together. Imagine teaching first grade to 12th grade and university together. Is that not what Swami faced when he got up to speak his discourse? Because in the spiritual level, we have first graders. We literally and figuratively have first graders and university students there. We have elders, we have seniors. Bhagwan has to now deliver a discourse that makes sense, that gives something to hold on to each one. And Bhagwan would give his discourse, and after the discourse you call somebody and ask what Swami said, they would say, Swami told that we should do bhajans. Another will say, Swami spoke on Advaitanandam. Somebody else will say, Swami spoke on how seva should be done. Somebody will say, I like this story that Swami said. Now, did you attend the same discourse or different discourses? Of course, it's the same discourse. But then, different aspects of the discourse touched different people's hearts. And how it touches, based on each one's level of understanding and each one's spiritual growth. And I feel that is how we have to take, when we hear Bhagwan's discourse, when Swami says, Kirtanam is the best way, what does it feel in the heart? If it resonates with our heart, then that is a message for us. So, Kirtanam becomes the best for me. Because Bhagwan is teaching a wide range of students from KG to PG in the spiritual plane. He gives out frequencies and vibrations needed for all the levels. And depending on our level, we resonate with that frequency. And therefore, the frequency with which we resonate is the message for us. There is no need to intellectualize the other things and get confused. Just go with the heart. Don't do an extra analysis, because as they say, analysis leads to paralysis.
No, the whole problem starts with the question of what is the best. No, I have only one lifetime. I can't follow all these paths which you tell me. Tell me which is the best so I can follow. But I think with Swami saying that every time he speaks about one thing, when he says it's the best, it's just like what we spoke about in the Naveda Bhakti. Like, you know, each one is appears progressively better than the previous one. But we always have examples of each one having an example where, you know, that person has reached the ultimate only by following that. And I think Kirtanam Swami speaks about so many, the idea where, you know, in the 19th century, 20th century, 18th century, you have most of your saints who are actually singers.
Kirtankars.
You know, Kirtankars, be it Tukaram, Tyagaraja, Kabir, in some form, you know, either in poetry or in singing or in kirtans or in whatever way. I think Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the person Swami usually refers to as the example for this path. But you can see that there is something special about singing to the Lord. I remember it would be often said, you know, when you stand and pray to God, you know, He's sitting and listening. But when you sing and pray to God, He is dancing and listening. And, you know, there is There is something, because you are having a special ability as a human being to sing, and why not use it? And music is so dear to the Lord, and why not use that? And I think that's why Kirtan is special. Sankirtan is special because it adds that extra quality of unity, and you know, you can pull up each other and go towards the Lord to a certain extent. That's very important.
When you say of how music is so dear to the Lord, I'm reminded of this scene from the movie Annamaya. Annamaya is a Telugu poet and composer and singer, and Annamacharya's kirtans are sung even to this day. And the movie has really been made very beautifully in Telugu, and you can feel the devotion at the end of the movie, and you feel so beautiful, uplifted, and so much in love with God. In that, one of the final scenes of the movie is, you know, Annamacharya is singing out to the Lord. He's singing out, and he's partially tired, partially dejected. Tired is because he's grown old, and physically his body is no longer capable of doing what it used to do. And dejected is because he has known of so many cases where people hearing, who are doing Shravanam of his singing, have seen the Lord, have had darshan of the Lord, have attained the Lord. And he himself, he's doing the kirtan, he's singing, he has actually composed it. And when he's singing, though the Lord has appeared to him, he has not been able to recognize the Lord. So, never has there been an occasion where he sees and says, oh my Lord, you have come and been able to pour his love onto the Lord. Either the Lord has not come, or whenever he has come, Annamaya has not been aware that there is a Lord who has come. The Lord comes, and the Padmavati, the Lord, mother goddess, she also comes. So he's worshipping Tirupati Venkateshwara, you know. And he calls out and cries, and finally in this scene, it's a moving, you know, I get goosebumps even as I'm telling this. He's singing, and symbolically the string of his instrument breaks, and he knows that there's a time when the body has to go, and he cries and says, Lord, will you not come? That is when the Lord comes, and Annamacharya goes to the Lord and says, Lord, what took you so much time? Why don't you want me in you? Don't you want to give me the opportunity of being one with you? At that time, you know, the Lord says, Annamacharya, if I merge you into me, who will sing for me, Annamaya? You know? And it's almost like the Lord saying that, I just felt that Swami is saying that, I can get many people to merge into me, but who will sing for me? Because this is something that I love so much. That scene for me, you know, it epitomizes how much the Lord loves music. And I think in innumerable discourses, Swami has mentioned this clearly, where that question is asked from Lord Narayana as to what is dearest to you. And he says that the dearest to me is music. I think we'll possibly listen to that in Swami's own voice to understand how much singing for the Lord, Kirtanam, means for the Lord.
When there
is God in you, there is no scope to fear.
So we should install God in our heart.
So we should install God in our
heart. The heart is
gifted so as to act as a throne in which God
should be seated.
And he is installed there in our heart.
Anduvalane mad bhaktaha yatra gayanti tatra tishthami narada. Akkade nenu pratishtheyanu.
I install myself where my glory is sung.
That's that famous quote which Swami would often say, wherever my glory is sung, I install myself there. And I think another incident which we have mentioned many times is apparently one musician goes to, I think it is Ramana Maharishi, and she's an exponent of the Veena. So she asks Ramana Maharishi that, you know, Maharishi, can I attain the ultimate? Can I merge in the Lord, or realization, or Atma Sakshatkar, whatever it is? Can I attain that through music? And I think even as she was asking that question, she was expecting yes to be the answer, but Ramana Maharishi says, no, you can't. And she's surprised, and she says, how can you say that? Because you have these stories of Tyagaraja and Annamacharya and all these great saints, Mirabai, who have attained the ultimate through music. And then Ramana Maharishi says, no, you've got it wrong. It's not the music which got them there. Their love and devotion expressed itself as music, and that's what got them there. And this is again something which Swami would very often tell in his discourses. you know, it's not just about what you sing or how well you sing or how beautiful the song is. How well are you in tune with that within? And Swami would say that when you speak, when you sing, when you, you know, sing of the glory of the Lord, at some point, is there that perfect unity of thought, word and deed? And Swami would say, that is the prerequisite. If I'm not wrong, it's in the same discourse, Swami says, that when you speak about Kirtanam, what is it that's required for that Kirtanam to be perfect? Swami said, it should start with that purity which is represented as purity of thought, word and deed.
In fact, again, there's another episode, I think we have narrated it more than once in different satsangs, but I am reminded of the experience of Sri T.V. Hariharan, who is today a wonderful bhajan composer. So many phenomenal bhajans, Anandamaya Bhagavan, Hey Premamaya Bhagavan, you know, all these bhajans, famous bhajans have been his compositions. One of the first experiences, possibly the first experience he had with Bhagwan, was when he thought that he would bowl over Swami with his ability to play the violin. And as he was, and because he was also a bhajan composer, and he thought that this is something that will floor Swami, because the Lord loves music, Bhagwan is called Ganapriya, and here he is very good at music and he's a good composer also. And when he tried it, he saw that Bhagwan was the least impressed. Of course, I'm cutting down all the other parts of the incident and mentioning the main crux. That is when Swami told him, he says that Swami told him, Tyagaraja did not compose music. He just spoke with the Lord. That is what has become music. See, when you said that it's not music that pleases the Lord, that is very true. When the heart is clear and you just converse with the Lord, it becomes music to the ears of whoever is listening. That's why we say, right, when he speaks, it is music to the ears. So that means that there is some magical quality in speech itself that feels like music to us. That is what it is. It is the purity of the heart that becomes music to the Lord's ears. So it is not essential that we have to be excellent in music and tunes, because as Swami says, he's looking only at the purity of the heart. That is why it is said that Bhagwan is Bhavapriya. So as you said, the prerequisite for all this is to have that purity and communication with the Lord.
So probably at this point, we'll just take a quick break. We'll come back and...
Yeah, what else? How can you have a satsang on Sankirtan without a kirtan?
Right. So we'll have a small bhajan, dear listeners. Don't go away. We're going to continue after this short break.
वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
दुख भंजन 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 तेरु नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरु नाम ओ साई
Thank you. संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
तुम संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
तुम संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
तुम संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
सुमिरन करूं तेरो नाम ओ साई
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 पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
परतीश्वर साई राम
परतीश्वर साई राम
परतीश्वर साई राम भक्त वत्सल तेरो नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरो नाम ओ साई
दुख भंजन तेरो नाम ओ साई
दुख भंजन तेरो नाम
भक्त वत्सल तेरो नाम ओ साई
भक्त वत्सल तेरो नाम ओ साई
तुम संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
तुम संग बांधी प्रेम की डोरी
सुमिरन करूं तेरो नाम ओ साई
सुमिरन करूं तेरो नाम ओ साई
पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
पतितो धारण भक्त परायण
परतीश्वर साई राम
परतीश्वर साई राम
परतीश्वर साई राम
परतीश्वर साई राम
भक्त वत्सल तेरो नाम ओ साई दुख भंजन तेरो नाम
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स वी वेर डिस्कसिंग कीर्तनम इन द नवविध भक्ति मार्ग हैविंग कंप्लीटेड श्रवणम इन द फोर्टनाइट बिफोर नाउ एज वी सेड कीर्तनम भगवान हैज स्पोकन एट लेंथ इन मेनी डिस्कोर्सेस एस्पेशली व्हेन इट कम्स टू कीर्तनम वाया विच इज सिंगिंग we both Prem and myself felt that the detail into which Bhagwan has gone into on Kirtanam in singing, the kinds of Kirtanam, the kind of Sankirtanam, it is so detailed and exhaustive and phenomenally complete that it would require an entire satsang for itself. So possibly we will keep that for next week. What we thought we should touch upon this week before we conclude this week's episode on Kirtanam was the fact that is Kirtanam restricted only to singers? Both of us are inspired to say that we don't think so. It is not that you have to be a singer alone if you want to practice Kirtanam, because Kirtanam can definitely take many other ways too. Right, Prem?
Actually, I think probably inspired by the fact that both of us are not singers, I guess. And we can't concede so much ground and say that only singers can practice Kirtanam. But as we said, you know, the base of this thing is on the word Kirti itself, which actually means fame or glory. And if you look at it, as we said last time, Shravanam, I mean, if Kirtanam has to be only singing, then Shravanam should be only listening to music, right?
Correct.
But when you say Shravanam, when we spoke about Shravanam, when we said that when you listen to the glory of the Lord, you know, be it in a satsang, be it in a Sai Katha or something like that.
Or when you see a video.
That desire to share that thing, you know, something I've heard or something I've received which is so special, can I go and share it with others? Can I go and, experience the joy of giving it to others and sharing it with them? That is when, you know, that is what is expressed as this path of Kirtanam. In fact, we always have this beautiful incident which is narrated in the Bhagavatam, where you have Vyasa Maharishi. You know, he is somebody who is so accomplished. He is supposed to have written the Vedas, he is supposed to have classified the Vedas, written the Upanishads, and the Mahabharata is composed by him. He has done immense good for humanity through all these works, but there is no satisfaction in him. You know, there's something which is lacking. That's when sage Narada comes along, and it is Narada who actually tells about his past. I don't know the complete story, but about the journey of his soul from the previous kalpa, where, you know, he is born as a boy who is in the hermitage. He's born to a lady who works in a hermitage. How by listening to those people speaking about the Lord, he's so impressed. And he takes to singing of the Lord's name, and he goes around singing. And purely by spreading the glory of the Leelas of the Lord, the glory of the Lord, that is how he becomes a Manasaputra of Brahma. He's been given that opportunity because of that. And Narada. Narada, and he says, so the best thing you could do is compose the Bhagavatam, which speaks about the glory of the Lord. It will not only give you peace, but you have no idea how much joy and peace it is going to give. So in that way, if you see, what Vyasa did was, probably he did not write a song. He wrote the Bhagavatam as a book, but what he did was also Kirtana. He actually was spreading the glory of the Lord.
You know, coming to a more modern example, there is something called Ravindra Sangeet, which is a kind of music that originated with Maharshi Ravindranath Tagore. But actually, if you listen to it, it's not a very complicated tune. It's quite a, it seems to be like a quite simple tune. It might be some tune that sticks to your mind and you keep humming any poem that you get in that tune. For me, it almost feels like that, you know, with due respect to Ravindra Sangeet. But then I feel that is also Kirtanam, because Ravindranath Tagore is a great poet. And if you read his poetry, you definitely get inspired. You get inspired and you feel a thrill in your heart. The same kind of thrill that you feel in your heart when you listen to the beautiful rendition of a bhajan or a song where you're calling out to the Lord. So, when the same effect is being achieved by that, as you rightly said, even that is Kirtanam. Public speaking, private speaking, a conversation where you have and where you, a study circle, a private study circle, where you get inspired listening to what other person is saying, and there, if you are speaking and sharing the inspiration and sharing the thoughts, that is Kirtanam. You are possibly writing down. It might even be your personal diary which nobody is reading for the next 50, 60 years. But if you have written those thoughts that have been inspired by the Lord and you have left it there, 50 years later somebody reads it, it touches them. See, these things become timeless, eternal, because whenever they are accessed, they lead to that inspiration. So, that is also Kirtanam. So, just as we defined Shravanam as any kind of input, we can possibly define Kirtanam as any kind of output.
Now, going by the most modern way of explaining it, probably, you know, we're all familiar with Twitter, the social media. You know, there, let's say that you're a person of standing, you know, you have a lot of followers and people kind of take your word very seriously. And I send you a tweet. Now, I send you a tweet by saying that, you know, I believe in this thought, I send you a thought or something. If you retweet it, you know, that is when you are giving your authentication to that tweet which I've sent you. And the moment you retweet it, it means like, you know, I agree with this, or I kind of stand by this statement which was made. I think Kirtanam is something like that. You know, I can endlessly be a secret listener. You know, probably nobody will know I'm actually listening to about stories about Swami. But when I stand up and speak, I am giving my authentication to that. I am saying that I stand by this. You know, I speak it, I stand by it. And that's what is Kirtanam, that's what Kirtanam stands for. That I remember when we were all in the hostel, you know, our warden used to tell us that when you become a room leader, you're supposed to take a kind of a session or a two once in a week. When you're supposed to speak to the students about discipline, I mean, they're just a year or two younger to you, right? Mm. In the hostel, that's what happens. You're in the final year and they're in the second, they are sophomores or they're the freshers. So it would sometimes feel a little odd about, you know, you're not too old enough to sermonize to them about discipline. So when we express this to the warden say, no, that's precisely the point. Because when you speak, it first reaches you. And you know, you, next time when you are in a situation when you're going to not be in discipline, you will remember that, oh, I said it, how can I not do it? Mm-hmm. I think that's what Kirtanam actually ensures, that when you stand up and speak, for instance, when I'm going to give a talk, if I'm going to speak about, let's say, surrender, you know, whatever happens, you should never leave Swami, or even when bad comes, you should feel that this is Swami's gift. The next time when I crib, when I'm in a problem, it really hits me. Hey, just yesterday I spoke like this, you know, just the previous talk I gave, I spoke like this. It really hits you, and I think that's what Kirtanam does, be it writing, singing, speaking. When you give your stamp, you know, there is a certain amount of ego even in the devotee, we have not transcended that. When I put my stamp on something, I better stand by it. I'm giving my authentication to it.
I have experienced what you have said, you know, when I had to give a talk on addiction. There are several addictions each one of us is addicted to. It need not be something as gross as drug or narcotics or smoking. But I noticed that for almost a week after that talk, I was conscious of my addictions and I made a lot of efforts to actually overcome them. And as you said, because it come, because you have given your stamp, so the question might be asked as to so after a week you're back to normal, so what is the use of doing Kirtanam? My reply would be, in order to solve my problem, I need to do a Kirtanam on addiction every week so that it keeps lasting. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you wash your hands with soap to clean, but what's the use? At the end of the day, they're again dirty. The solution is not giving up washing your hands, but to ensure that you wash your hands and have bath daily. So in the same way, even though the effect may be temporary, we have to continue. Because, you know, I remember this presentation that was made when we were in college. They say, even if you are not good, pretend to be good. Start with pretending to be good. You will tend to be good and you will end being good. Because once you start doing it over and over again, it becomes part of your psyche, it becomes part of you, and you will never, you know, go back to the old ways or the wrong ways, because Kirtanam has that effect. Just like a pot being kept on a stone repeatedly again and again can even wear down the stone, so too our tendencies and our vasanas from previous lives, which have almost been set into stone for us, can still be worn down by continuous Kirtanam. And as you say, Kirtanam need not be just singing, speaking or writing, anything.
So now again we are constricting Kirtanam. Instead of saying it's only for singers, we're saying if you're a singer, speaker or writer, it's okay. But is that the case? But when you speak, what happens actually, you know, when you give a speech about Swami or when you're writing about Swami, what really happens is you're trying to highlight those aspects about Swami which are actually special, which can be seen as expressions in the devotees' lives. So in a sense, you're actually trying to see the way Swami's glory, Swami's grace and Swami's love expresses itself. So in what you really do is, you're trying to look for places where it happens. And is it necessary to be a speaker? Is it necessary to have a podium and lectern to come and speak about that? No, I think when you start noticing that in your own life, when events happen in your life and you see that, you know, this is Swami's glory expressing itself. Hmm. You know, when you have difficulty, when you're having, forget difficulty, that comes in a later stage. When everything nice happens in your life, are you able to stop and say, this is Swami's grace? No, this is really Swami's love for me. I think you already started doing Kirtanam.
Absolutely, Prem. You know, in this light, just a week ago, I was in Bangalore and I was with one of my cousins. And he is slowly, you know, if I can say, he knows Swami from his childhood, but that's about it. It's just like a superficial surface knowledge of Swami and respect for Swami. So he said that, you know, Arvind, you have gone home. Let me ask you one question. Why has Swami been so unfair to my father?
Mm-hmm.
Now, his father had, you know, made up so many loans and he had been out of work. He'd almost become bankrupt. This cousin of mine was under great financial stress, and to his credit, he has broken out of that and he's doing extremely well today.
Mm-hmm.
He owns an event management company. You know, debt has become something of a far, far away. Okay, he has got all the surpluses, all the excesses needed, all that he has got. So he asked me this. He said, why did God or Swami, whoever, why did they do that to me, my father? What wrong did he do? Why did they make him bankrupt? In return, I asked him, you know, he was quite impressed with the answer that I was giving. And he kept telling me, you know, you are very great devotee, you are very great devotee.
Mm-hmm.
So I just asked him, tell me, who do you think is a greater devotee, you or me? He said, absolutely, it's you. I am not a devotee. You are the devotee, he said. Then I said, then why is Swami so unfair? He said, what is unfair? I said, see, I have got so little. You have got a house that is 5 times my house size.
Mm-hmm.
You have got a car that is 10 times my car's cost. You have got this. I started listing out all that he has got. He said, see, it's not that you chose that kind. I said, no, it's not that I chose that, but I never said no to this. I won't mind if I have this.
Mm-hmm.
Why is God being partial to you? He said, possibly, he then said, you have possibly diverted your efforts partially towards God, partially towards this. I have put my efforts only for this, so I have got this. Then I said, you know what, I can produce hundreds of people who have put in double this effort, but don't even have half of what you have got. Then he says, you see, it's not about only efforts, it has to be smart efforts. So then I say, so whatever you have got is because of your smart efforts, but whatever you don't have or your father doesn't have is because of God. So, you know, then he started to think. Then he said, then what? Everything is God or what? I said, yeah, everything is God or everything is you. You decide. And then when we went into how his success has come, he himself was pointing out to some incident where he says, I have no reason why this happened. It has happened. And towards the end of that 2 hour long conversation, he started telling, you know what? I think I'm so blessed. And because of that, and he began to even see the positives of what his father's bankruptcy did to him, which has made him more sensitive, which has made him more street smart and all that. Now, as you said, at the end of it, both of us felt so light and elevated, and I really feel, yes, that is also Kirtanam. Why not? When we are able to feel the bounty that God has done, when we become sensitive to it and express our gratitude, that becomes Kirtanam.
Very true. I think for that you don't need anybody else. You know, going back to the same thing we did in the first episode, where we said that each one of these paths has the ability to take you to the ultimate.
Hmm.
And this is what Kirtanam can do. You know, Kirtanam is not just singing, is not just speaking, is not just writing at this one. But it is recognizing God's glory at every moment when it happens. And that is every moment. You know, it's not like once in a while. It happens every moment when we can constantly say that, hey, this is because of God. You know, this is because of God. This is also because of God. I'm not able to figure out why it is special for me, but I will figure out, you know, when time comes.
If I need to figure it out.
Right. And that is when you know, this is something which will happen. You are able to connect every event in your life with God. And, some of the saints, when they speak about Radha, that's what they would say, that she reaches a point where she is not able to remove anything from the memory of Krishna. You know, when she hears somebody pouring water, she remembers Yamuna, she remembers Krishna. When she sees the sky, she sees it's blue, she remembers the peacock feather, she remembers Krishna. And, you know, she has gone to a stage where she's not able to disconnect any vision, any sound, anything which she cognizes from Krishna. That is nothing but Kirtanam, because again,
absolutely,
you're talking about the glory. And when we can take Kirtanam to this level where we are not able to separate the glory of the Lord, the Leela of the Lord, from every event and everything which we experience in life, I think that's the ultimate of Kirtanam.
At that time, it won't matter whether it expresses as a song, whether it expresses a writing, whether it expresses as a speech, or it just expresses as a silent inner joy that is inexplicable. Because we are able to recognize every moment as a blessing from the Lord and feel gratitude for the same. Once again, I think, Prem, by sheerly only by Swami's love and grace, just as we got a beautiful broad definition for Shravanam as to the vibrations that we feel, I think we have arrived at a beautiful definition for Kirtanam, where it means that we feel gratitude every point in our life, because feeling gratitude is a way of acknowledging Bhagwan's presence in our life, and acknowledging Bhagwan's presence is, I think, one of the first steps in singing His glory and singing about Bhagwan. And when we reach that point where everything in our life we see as His blessing, as His grace, as His gift to us, I think there can be no other kirtan. Life itself becomes one long kirtan. So dear listeners, with that, I think we will be concluding this week's part on Kirtanam. As we stated earlier, Swami has spoken at length on a specific kind of kirtan, which is singing the glory of the Lord, especially on Sankirtan, the types and examples. It was so lengthy and exhaustive that we thought we would take it up separately in another satsang. But we will, when we go through that also, we will see that singing the Sankirtan that Swami mentions is nothing but a specific and a special case of Kirtan, where we feel grateful and gratitude for everything that the Lord has done for us.
And what perfect topics to talk on the radio, because you're talking about Shravanam and Kirtanam, and that's precisely what Swami blesses us with through this opportunity to do this satsang. And no amount of, you know, expression of gratitude is sufficient to really tell us, you know, to really put it equal to what Swami has blessed us with, offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and this humble effort at Swami's lotus feet. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me was Arvind. We conclude with this small bhajan. Don't go away. On the other side of it, you'll be joined by Brother Chandu with his program Love to Love.
को भाई जग की माया प्रभु को कभी न ध्याया मन को भाई जग की माया प्रभु को कभी न ध्याया हर पग में मेरा मन भर माया सतमार्ग ना पाया सुंदर जीवन पाकर भी मन मूर्ख समझ न पाया माया के झंझाल जगत में माया के झंझाल जगत में घेरे अब तू अंतर ज्योत जला दे ले ले नाम हरि का अब तू अंतर ज्योत जगा ले पाकर सार प्रेम का मन ये आनंद में हो जाए जलांतर में पालो शाश्वत धाम बोलो राम साई राम बोलो राम साई राम
Saira, Bolo Ram, Saira.